Welcome everybody to this Freshfields podcast. My name's Liam Simmons. I'm a trainee solicitor here in the restructuring insolvency team at Freshfields. Today we're going to be focusing on the Nearstar restructuring, and I have with us the Freshfields associates, Emma Gatto, Will Snowden, Bethan Cunniff and Sam Rigney. So the Nearstar deal was a multi-billion pound restructuring. It had various complex features surrounding it. In this podcast, we're going to be discussing the key features of the deal, Chapter 11 considerations, along with particular highlights, challenges and lessons learned. So who wants to start us off by telling us about the Nearstar restructuring?
Our work spanned over approximately 10 different jurisdictions due to Nearstar's operations being located in Europe, North America and Oceania. The parent was a Belgian-listed company, the key borrower was a Swiss entity, and the subsidiaries were where the mining and smelting operations took place, were located throughout Australia, Canada, USA and parts of Europe, including the Netherlands, I think Norway and Belgium. Then I guess move on to the debt composition and look at how complex that was. There was convertible bonds which were listed in Frankfurt, high yield bonds which were listed in Luxembourg, and approximately 20 different facilities involving multiple lenders, which included prepayment facilities and working capital facilities. I can probably go into a bit more detail, but I think that kind of gives you a big picture of how it was. It's also worth noting that what made negotiations, I think, even trickier was the fact that there was no intercreditor agreement, which is something that our listeners might find quite unusual given the circumstances. So I guess with that backdrop, we had to get nearly all of our European offices and our US team involved, as well as our restructuring, tax, employment, bond, corporate and energy technology and infrastructure practices here in London. So it was a big group effort. We also opted to seek Chapter 15 recognition where, in circumstances where certain of the scheme creditors were domiciled in the US, and therefore we worked particularly closely with our US team.
So just coming back to the piece around US colleagues working on the Chapter 15 side of things, did the team not consider a Chapter 11 procedure?
So given the size of the Nearstar group and how international it was, Chapter 11 would obviously have been at the forefront of people's minds when we were planning the implementation phase. That was an obvious choice from the start. But actually, as it turned out, it wasn't the most viable option. There wasn't really the sort of appetite in the market for that, either amongst the existing stakeholders or third-party providers. Also, we needed a group-wide solution, and the UK scheme gave us an option to do a single scheme promoted by a single company that would deal with €1 billion worth of bond debt.
Yeah, that's right, Will, because, I mean, Chapter 11 can be a fantastic solution, but what you do need is all guarantors to file, and that means that it is a whole group process, and that can become a very all-encompassing process and a very expensive process. So the debtor in possession financing is fantastic in Chapter 11, but in this transaction, there was just no appetite for it, and therefore the scheme became the solution we adopted, and it meant we could just have one company presenting the scheme arrangement.
Exactly. And as Sam mentioned earlier, this geographic spread of the Nearstar group meant that there are lots of local jurisdictions in play. And one of the issues there is that the US Chapter 11 isn't always recognised in those jurisdictions as the appropriate means of restructuring those companies. So we needed something that would have been acceptable around the world. To go even more extreme than that, in certain jurisdictions, a US Chapter 11 could have exposed directors there to severe penalties if they'd filed their companies for the US process.
We had specific concerns in Switzerland, didn't we?
Indeed. We then looked to the European options, potential Dutch options and Belgian options. The Dutch scheme, which has been delayed somewhat, wasn't ready in time for our restructuring. The local Belgian processes that we looked at also, because the Belgian listed entity wouldn't quite have given us that group-wide solution either. So ultimately, we had that single UK scheme process promoted by a single UK company, which was cost-effective and time-efficient and gave us that group-wide solution that we needed.
Moving on to the scheme and the implementation of it, could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so really not the obvious choice at the start. No UK nexus apart from convertible bonds being subject to English law, but they also had an element of Belgium jurisdiction to them. But Belgium and Dutch issuers of high yield bonds, so really UK not the obvious nexus. But the other processes we examined globally were not appropriate for various reasons. So we came up with quite a creative way of inserting an English incorporated created NewCo, so a UK company acceding to the various bond documents. And that meant that we can present a wholly UK process. We also bolstered the jurisdiction with changing the governing law and jurisdiction of the various bond documents. And that was simply through using contractual amendments, so 50% under the high yield bonds. So there were a number of steps to prepare the scheme, but ultimately we ended up with a wholly UK process. And that was fantastic, really, because it meant that we could avoid any Brexit risk and deliver the deal without any concern of challenges in Europe.
So it certainly sounds like a very complex deal. What were some of the challenges that the team faced during the restructuring? And was there ever any sort of point that the team thought that the deal could have fallen through?
So yeah, there were definitely some serious challenges, especially towards the start of the process. It was about a 10-month process starting in autumn of 2018. And the main theme there was the liquidity need for the group. In October, November, the group's liquidity fell away quite sharply. It became increasingly urgent to put in interim funding to provide a stable platform for the restructuring so that we could put the implementation plan into action. Trafigura, who had a significant stake in the group and was already a creditor, put in trade finance to the tune of $650 million in the start of December 2018, which gave a pretty stable platform. And then by April, when we locked up, $250 million of bridge financing came in, which lasted through to the end of the restructuring, which was a great help. The Nearstar Group also had technical difficulties during the restructuring process. There was also a cyber attack in the spring, which, as you can imagine, was quite a setback during the process. But luckily, we managed to navigate our way through that. And in addition to the operational difficulties that the group faced, the fact that its parent company is listed in Belgium presented certain challenges as well. We had not only close regulatory scrutiny, but also certain disclosures and reporting obligations that came to the fore throughout the process meant that there was increased public attention on the deal, which, as you can imagine, creates its own challenges. But coming back to your second question about the deliverability of the deal and whether we thought we might not get over the line at any point, I think we had an eminently deliverable plan in which people had confidence.
Not to mention we had incredibly high levels of support and we had an extremely high threshold of support from the group's bondholders, over 90%. So we were fairly confident that we'd get the deal through.
So thanks everybody for spending the time to give us some of those insights. And thanks everyone who is listening. If you would like any further information, please visit freshfields.com/restructuring hot topics.